opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We're going to have our eyes on the U.S. match as they try to get to the knockout stage of the World Cup for the first time in a long time. So right now it's 0-0 in the third minute. We'll just have a corner of our eye on it. 5961, Cully was the bridge to McCown. You guys forget. No, we don't forget. He was out to pave the way when Flores filed suit. They were in a scramble. Yes, we know. The problem was their original plan to force McCown down our throats. Was that the problem, though? Would Josh McCown be worse? Like, ask yourself that question, because I'm not sure that it's possible. I'm not sure that it's possible to be worse. As bad as Josh McCown, like, that looked on paper, we've had this conversation, don't really want to go down that road again. I understand that he has zero resume in the coaching business as an NFL head coach. Would it have been worse?
You don't know, but you at least believe that a guy that stood right next to the head coach would have had a firm concept of timeouts, time management, challenges, things like that. Look, we called Cully exactly how we saw it, and you saw it too. And it was a guy that was completely overmatched. A guy that had never been a head coach before, and maybe there was a reason for it. Because the more the season got deeper into it, the more that situations popped up, the more that he showed that he was incompetent and was failing miserably when handling said situations, the more it was evident in press conferences. It was evident it was too much for him. And you know what? You can scrutinize the guys in the NFL that have gone through similar situations this season, and you can look at all the Denver is the perfect example. But when you look at what was going on, we called Cully exactly like we saw it from day one and continued to call it as it all unfolded. And it was the right move to move on from him because it was the wrong move to hire him in the first place. So to say that McCown would have been worse, I don't know if that's possible because he made so many blunders that a head coach in the NFL should never make. From a McCown perspective, you don't know. But again, there's a reason why you look at guys that have been, you know, Jeff Saturday or Josh McCown or guys like this, played in the league as long as you have at key positions like center or quarterback where they're involved in everything, and you hope that there's a guy that has the concept of what it would take to be a coach just like he had a concept to be a player. I just think Cully surprised everybody from the get-go, and they were right.
Yeah, I mean, Cully, people were advocating for Cully on the text line. I think that they, like Todd says on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, they play hard for him. Okay, yeah, they played hard for him. I don't think that the Texans are playing not hard for Lovey, though. I mean, you're down 30-0 at the half, and you fight in that game. Look, I know that we ridicule that and mock that. The Texans tried hard and positives in the second half. They didn't roll over. Like, they didn't roll over under Cully. I don't think that they're rolling over under Lovey. I just don't think they're very good. I don't think they're very well coached. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. 0174, Vince Lombardi would be 1-10 with this squad. Did the coach the Texans hired this year really matter that much? I think you're right, but again, the win-loss record doesn't tell the whole context of the story.
That's what I was going to get to when you mentioned this during the last segment. When people get to, oh, it's all about the players, it's not about the coaches, okay? You're doing that based on judging this team with wins and losses more so than you are from play to play. When you look at from play to play, offensive and defensive, and especially like from an offensive perspective, the offensive line, we all agree that there's enough talent on this offensive line to be better than average. But when you see that the lack of coaching, creating continuity and understanding from a player to player perspective across that offensive line, where they need to be, where they need to move to on said plays in order for play to have the best chance to be successful and the breakdowns that go with it, or a Kenyon Green as simple as using a number one pick on a guy that is actually not progressing because of the fact that you can see he's not getting coached up on a daily basis to understand what it's like to play in the NFL and the things he needs to do. It's real easy to be able to pinpoint those things looking deep around the film and saying they're not getting coached up because they don't understand where they need to be on an outside sweep or where the guard needs to move to on this protection. All those things are being lost in the cracks because people are just worried about wins and losses and analyzing the coaching instead of on a play-by-play basis analyzing all the breakdowns.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Nick Caserio has started to catch more and more blame. which is fine. I think it's fair to criticize the general manager. I think it's fair to critique the general manager. When Nick Caserio was making lousy trade after lousy trade 2 years ago, and I went back and looked at the receipts on this, and we were all over it. When he was trading a six-rounder for Ryan Finley, a fifth-rounder for Anthony Miller, we were talking about it in real time. We were saying how lousy of trades these were while they were happening, and people now are turning back the clock and pointing to that as like bucket list items of why the Texans should now all of a sudden move on from Nick Caserio. I don't think Nick Caserio should be fired. I think the seat should start to get warmer. I think Cal McNair should go Bill O'Brien treatment with Nick Caserio, where he says, okay, you're going to have all the power now. I'm going to not meddle in any sort of head coaching hires, and you have all power, but with great power comes great responsibility, and if you fail, we're going to move on from you sooner rather than later. That's all fine. I think it's fair to critique Nick Caserio. It's fair to point fingers and criticize Nick Caserio. One thing that I think is really wild, though, is that Nick Caserio, he went on with, you know, the morning guys on Highway to Hell, and it was like pre-Thanksgiving, and he said to them as he was leaving the segment, basically telling them like Happy Thanksgiving, and he said that there's more to be it's more than football in life, basically. Like it's okay. He said that the Happy Thanksgiving guys, let's remember that it's more to life than football. Nick Caserio's taking heat for that. Like I can understand why you would dislike Caserio, the draft picks, maybe you don't like them, trading late round draft picks for absolutely nothing. But whenever a guy says that there's more to life than football, you're going to use that as criticism to Nick Caserio keeping his job or not. That is wild to me and tells me that you should get a life.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We've said how many times, even doing what we do on a daily basis, that this is just a discussion about sports. It's not, you know, real life on a daily basis. And I'm sure he was just trying to lighten the mood because of the holiday and everything that goes with it. Yeah. Yet he's going to get hyper-analyzed for that. I mean, I understand analyzing him for draft picks. Sure. I understand analyzing him, like you said, for trades. I understand the fact that I personally brought up yesterday, I would like to have heard from him as well as Lovey on what went into and who was involved in making the change from Davis Mills. Those are the kind of things that are fair. They're on the table, and those are things that should be addressed. But going that far to that level to try and reach to have that kind of criticism of Nick Caserio, I don't think that's appropriate.
It's wild to me. And like, we're always honest and transparent, and we try to do it in real time, not 18 months mm-hmm. later, whenever it's not like the flavor of the week, right? Like, the flavor of the week right now is to criticize Nick Caserio, and you start going item by item of why you don't like Nick Caserio. Anthony Miller trade. We said it when he made the trade. Yep. Ryan Finley trade. We said it when he made the trade. But to say that there's more to life than football and that that should be a reason that Nick Caserio shouldn't have a job, that's ridiculous. Like, that is stupid.
Yeah, see, and the thing is to me, like, and I've always given him credit for the Deshaun Watson trade because it looked like the most uncontrollable situation that he controlled as best as he could to get as much as he possibly could out of whichever team Deshaun picked. And I thought that was genius. Of course, there's plenty to pick apart in the late round draft pick trades and the things that he did along the way. I gave him credit for this draft. I still think this draft was very, very good. But I think that in a lot of ways, you look at a guy like Petrie, did he hit a wall? Has he just had too much? But it doesn't mean that he's not a good football player. Do I think that Stingley is going to be one of the better corners as he continues to develop? Absolutely. But did they put him in the right situation so that he could succeed this year? Probably not. But I think that that doesn't diminish his skills and the fact that he will continue to get better. And I think that they did. Obviously, you found something in Pierce. And Pierce is a guy that you can pencil in and count on as being your running back going forward. That's a win. He got him in the fourth round. We don't know what Mechie's going to be. We know what Christian Harris looks like he can be, and that's why I believe he did good with this draft. He's got to do more. He's got to do more because of, if you sit there, and I always go to my whiteboard, positives and negatives, the negative is going to be the coaching situation, whether he is personally responsible or not, he's getting the blame. And so regardless of what happens with Lovey, you misstepped on the first one. You look like you misstepped on the second one. And now do you get a chance to get a third one? You got a 6-year deal. So you're going to be scrutinized and you've got to be able to take it and accept the fact that it's on you. It's on your watch. So what do you do next? This draft is hyper important. We know that from a quarterback perspective, but more so from everybody after the quarterback, because those are the ones that are going to make this roster better than the worst roster in the NFL. Those are the ones where you can truly get it as scrutinized. However, we know that the quarterback's the most important position on the field. You got to get that right too. And as you've said, if body type wise, Young is not the kind of guy that Caserio believes in as a quarterback in the NFL, and he passes on him and then he succeeds, That's a massive problem.
713-780-ESPN. Casario, fair to be criticized. Some of the criticisms you guys have for him, though, is wild. But there is one that is valid. Something that was said during the broadcast on Sunday, Texans-Dolphins, that leaves you scratching your head when you're talking about GM Nick Casario. Also, who's more to blame? Because there's a lot of blame to go around. Lovie Smith or Nick Casario? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I hear people saying that Nick Casario should be fired, that he shouldn't be saying that there's things more important than football and wishing people happy Thanksgiving. How dare Nick Casario do that? Now, look, there's a lot of criticism to be given towards Nick Casario. Absolutely. There's the trades. Remember whenever we were talking about that, too, when we were the first ones talking about that? Oh, you guys, why is that a red flag? It's so minuscule. It doesn't matter. Well, you make bad move after bad move after bad move, it starts to add up, and it raises the red flag that you're a dude who's willing to make bad moves.
And not to mention the fact that everybody that was willing to sweep it under the rug said, well, it was only a sixth-round pick or a seventh-round pick here or there. But what happens when it's not? What happens when it's a meaningful draft pick or a meaningful player, and you go, and you can point back and go, there were signs, we tried to tell you, but you said it didn't matter because it wasn't a relevant enough pick. Well, these are the kind of things now that are popping up and that are fair criticism because of the fact now you really have to wonder if this guy is competent to do the job. And was he overall? Because we talk about a Jeff Saturday type, but we talk about Casario through osmosis. And I always go back to the Daryl Morey theory of just because Daryl Morey was really smart and really, you know, an analytical guy that got the job, that doesn't mean that Gerson Rostis and all the guys under him were going to get the same kind of knowledge and have the same kind of understanding of the way the system works. We look at this and say from a perspective of just because he worked with Bill Belichick, was he ever in charge of everything and had an understanding of enough of it to where he got his first start as a general manager that he could grasp the concept and run with it?
Yeah. See, I'm a big proponent of hiring someone who's responsible for success, where they came from. That's why I think that a lot of Belichick disciples have not worked. Like, the reason the Patriots have had success is why? Because of Bill Belichick, before that, because of Tom Brady. They've not had great assistants come from there and have good success as head coaches anywhere else. Why? Because I believe that they were not responsible for the success in New England. Now, if I'm trying to hire a coach, I want to hire an offensive mind or a defensive mind from a team who's had good offensive or defensive success, but it's not because of the head coach or the personnel. Like, it's difficult to do. I get that. But I'm not going to hire a guy just because a team wins. That said, like, the whole Nick Casario should be fired, I think it's too early for this. Now, do I think the seat needs to get warmer for Nick Casario? Yes, absolutely. I think that you can start to turn up the heat on Nick Casario way too early to fire him. Like, no one expected Nick Casario to come in here and be winning in year two. Like, we thought year four, really, honestly. Like, start seeing some improvement in year three. Maybe you have a winning season in year four. That might even be too early. But we knew this was going to be a long rebuild. Talking about firing Nick Casario 1.5 years into his tenure, I think is a bit outrageous. Now, here's Nick Casario. Like, the excuses are starting to add up. CBS, the sideline reporter, I forget her name, but she said that she had a conversation with Nick Casario. And this one, as much as I think it's silly that he's being criticized for saying be thankful for things outside of football, this is one where I think it's fair to criticize Casario.
As we go downstairs to Aditi.
Spiro, I talked to Texans general manager Nick Casario for a while on the field pregame. He said that for such a young team, the voice that Lovie Smith is, the steadiness, the way that he's same every week, that really matters. He also said, look, this has only really been 1.5 draft class that Casario has had. You need to give these young players time to develop. One more thing he said, in his entire career, this is probably the most he started scouting future players that he ever has before. 10 draft picks next year.
You can be thankful for things outside of football. You're not going to get hate from me, maybe other people in the city. But the excuses I find to be very silly. Like the whole Lovie Smith is a calming voice for these young players. Young players are going backwards, man. There's only 1.5 draft classes. Like, I understand that. No one expected this to be a fast rebuild. You're going to lose a bunch of games in the rebuild. But then, well, I've never scouted more than in my entire life. What? You should be reaching optimization in like maximum scouting minutes every single year. It shouldn't be anything new. So I do not like the excuses from Nick Casario.
But this, Jeremy, is something that he's done since he's gotten here, but they've ramped it up. And this is something that Lovie's adopted too, where you just, you get on the excuse train real quick and you are real quick to be able to say, I mean, remember Casario's press conference at the start of last season. Don't judge us by wins and losses, because you are already setting the table by saying, don't put the blame on us if this team doesn't win football games. And this is what we're trying to accomplish over this many years. And it's just getting started. We're just getting off the ground. But, you know, I think as you look at the entire scenario and the way it paints itself, and I go back to what you said about Belichick, the best guys that succeed coming off of the coaching trees are the guys that are empowered throughout the process. We know that Bill Belichick was a dictator. Why didn't they factor that into the selection process? Why, again, when we look at the Corn Ferry people, there's a reason why Casario wasn't high on that list. He wasn't on that list because of the fact that you're looking at people that at least were empowered. We know in Pittsburgh that Mike Tomlin was a guy that said, hey, go out and do your job. And if you know, this is something where you have this kind of knack for doing this, go do it and show me you can do it. And then you will show that you can spread your wings and go somewhere else and succeed, or maybe you'll do that here.
Yeah, I'm not to the point where I don't think Nick Casario can figure it out. Like, we've always been kind of on the fence.
But it's worrisome
about Nick
that
Casario.
He's kind of, again, he's feeding the media things to try and narrative that it's not his fault.
The excuses are, like, that bothers me. Like, it makes you uncomfortable. It doesn't make you very confident in Nick Casario. The whole, like, it's a process over results thing in year one of a rebuild, that's just realistic.
That's
like,
true.
That's truth. That's being honest. That's saying, look, we're in a rebuild. We're going to lose a lot of games in a rebuild. We should have known that was coming. Like, I can understand the frustration. You want your team to win. But if you're realistic, you understand that the Texans were going to lose a bunch of football games 2 years through Nick Casario's tenure as the general manager. Where I get frustrated is where he starts talking about, well, Lovie has a calming voice with the young players. Dude, you're talking to me like I'm stupid. I can see the young players moving backwards. Kenyon Green and Jalen Petrie don't look as good today as they did. Well, Kenyon Green was hurt. But Jalen Petrie week one, Kenyon Green week four. You telling me that you only had 1.5 draft classes, like, I understand that, but now you're trying to cover up things, like, you're trying to cover your own butt on that.
Well, yeah,
but you can say, like, okay, look, we still got to continue to be patient. It's year number two in a rebuild, but to start giving yourself excuses as to why the team is failing and now you're trying to have cop-outs along the way, that's something that people aren't going to respect.
He not only was covering his own butt, and again, expecting that if I say this to the media, especially national media covering the game on the sideline, they're just going to relay this and it's going to become the narrative, and that's the way it should be. But he's not only covering his own butt, now he's covering Lovie's too, because he knows as well as you and I do that he's going to be held responsible for Lovie Smith. But again, what you're saying is not what we're seeing along the way, because I just go back to the press conferences. If he's the stabilizing force, he's this guy that this team needs, then he shouldn't be cracking under pressure from the media, whether it's making a quarterback change or attacking guys from the Chronicle because they've been asking too many questions and asking too many questions that are getting under his skin.
And that's why I think that there has to be a change at the end of the year. And we can talk about, you know, that as the weeks come to a close. But I teased the question too. 713-780-ESPN. Who's more to blame right now? Lovie Smith, Nick Casario, for the sad state of affairs where the Houston Texans are?
It's a great question to ask, because I think that one guy has the stabilizing contract under his belt that says, I'm supposed to be here for 6 years. I'm okay. Lovie has the shorter-term deal that was a guy that was hastily put into this position that is going to take the majority of the heat. But I think that, again, Casario's going to, whether we know or don't know how much he had a say in selecting Lovie at the end of the day with everything that went on, it's on his watch. So I think that it starts at the top where you're right. He gets to be on the hot seat. They're not going to fire him with this many years left on his deal to pay him. And the fact that fairly, when you're doing a rebuild, we said 3 to 4 years is when you can really honestly judge a guy.
Like, whenever Casario was hired, when do you think Cal told him we should start winning again?
I don't know that Cal had the concept down enough to be able to make that. But what he should have said was 3 to 4 years, when we start getting into the third and fourth season, that's when we need to see tangible results in the fact that the team is getting better. There's more talent fortifying the roster. And hopefully you've got guys in the key skill positions that are going to show they're going to be leading this team for years to come.
Casario has not failed to meet goals because those goals still have time left on them. So, like, Casario has not failed any of those goals.
It goes back to what I said. They didn't draft bad football players, but they're just not, they're not making progress.
But from a Lovie point of view, what was Lovie hired to do? Lovie was hired to develop young players. Also, like, if you're trying to find positives for it, like some things that he was trying to accomplish, like develop the young players, make us better than what we were, improve from where we were a year ago. The players, the young players are not better. You've gotten worse. So, like, Lovey's actually failed to meet goals, whereas Nick Caserio still has time left on his goals. But, so if you ask the question, like, Caserio, Lovie, who's more to blame or whatever, I got to go Lovie.
Yeah, because the thing to me with Lovie is you're supposed to be a veteran head coach, experienced, been there, done that, and this stabilizing force that Caserio is talking about. And instead, you're the guy that's wilting under pressure. You're the guy that's cracking, and we're seeing from a developmental standpoint that we're not seeing what you're supposed to be known for, especially on the defensive side of the football, where as a defensive-minded coach, you're supposed to be developing Stingley. You're supposed to be putting Stingley. We said, look, we set the table for you. He's going to get burned. There's going to be times where he's going to make mistakes. But give him chances to play man-to-man. Don't let him sit there in zone situations all season where it, you know, some other guy might not do his job, but he might get the blame for it. But put him in the best chances to succeed for the long term by getting him the experience they need in the short term. You're not doing that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like asking to pick your poison, right? Like, what's the lesser of two evils? Who has more to blame? Lovie, Nick Caserio. I don't believe that Nick has failed to meet goals yet. It doesn't look like he's on track to meet those goals, but still time left on it. Lovie, for what he was hired to do, hasn't fulfilled those goals. Give me Lovie, picking of the two poisons, but he's the one for me. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's ask that question to Howard Balzer, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRP guest line, being joined as we are every Tuesday by Howard Balzer, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. Howard, thanks for taking a few minutes to hang out with the Killer Bees. Howard, we were just kicking around the Houston Texans current situation, which is a very, very sad place to be. One win, worst team in the NFL, we get it. Lovie Smith, first-year head coach, who's, you know, replacing the David Culley, who was a one-year head coach. Is it possible that the Houston Texans, I mean, they might have no choice at this point. Do they look for a new head coach in this offseason?
I can't get in the heads of what the brain trust. Well, I guess many of you there probably would use that term loosely to call it brain trust. But I would think that, I mean, you never know what they're thinking. And I'd known Lovie a bit when he was a defensive coordinator with the Rams back in the day. And I think the guy's a quality coach. And it doesn't – I mean – I understand how fan bases are and kind of the media push and all that. When a team isn't doing well, okay, change the coach, change the coach, change the coach. Well, you keep doing that, and then what happens? Okay, you get a new coach, and the next year you go 3-14 or something. Who knows what it is? Then you change again? I mean, the only way you can have any sustained success is to go with someone and stick with them and put the pieces in place with players to give that coach a chance to win. And that's... You know, that's what it comes down to. And there's so many factors in this league. There's so many close games. I get that everybody gets upset when a team isn't winning. So the easiest thing to say and to push for, change the coach, fire the coach, clean house, do this, do that. But a lot of times that just sets you back even more. So I'm one for stability, And I think the bottom now, if everyone's sitting there and saying, man, this is a talented roster. I can't believe they're not winning with this. Well, that's one thing. But I don't think anybody in their right mind would say that. And so, and here's the thing I always say, guys. And this is, I've seen this so many times, it just makes me laugh all the time. You'll hear the push, fire the coach. And then when that happens, then the narrative becomes, okay, now it's time to improve the talent. Well, no kidding. That's why a team loses, is because of talent that just doesn't measure up to who you're playing.
Well, Howard, the natural progression then is to analyze Nick Caserio. He got a 6-year deal. He had never been a general manager before, but the big selling point was he worked under Belichick and he worked under the greatest coach of all time, but he was a dictator. So you talk about improving the roster. We all see what we see and know it's not the best. It's the worst roster in the NFL. We know that he has done some positives in terms of the Watson deal and had a decent draft a year ago. I think it was a good draft. The players suddenly aren't performing like that. But if you're not going to put it on Lovey at this point or make a change, when is it reasonable to start putting it on Caserio and saying, hey, look, even if considering a second head coaching change when you already screwed up the first one with David Culley, when you look at all of those things, when is it fair to start analyzing and putting this on Caserio?
Well, it's a legitimate question, and it's a good one. And I think that you just said something that was very interesting, where you said, you thought they had a good draft, but suddenly these guys aren't performing. Well, when you bring in a bunch of rookies, first of all, everyone just expects these guys to walk on the field and be excellent players. But it rarely happens when you have a lot of young guys that aren't surrounded by seasoned veterans and guys that understand the game. And so you just don't walk and become good players. So when you have a lot of those guys playing, they're not going to be successful out of the box. And then there are situations where rookies come to teams that have some good veterans and all that. And it still takes them time to understand what it's like, what it's about to be a pro. So I think with someone with a GM, personnel guy, whatever, is building a program, I think you have to give it at least 3 years before you really know what you have. But if you keep changing the coaches, then that makes it even harder for all those guys to come in, because now you're changing the scheme, now you're changing this, you're changing that. And I know they didn't change that much on defense with Lovey, but the offense change. Whenever you have change, it takes some time to adjust to it. And I know guys that they'll be going to say, well, what about this team? What about, well, there's always outliers. I mean, there's always outliers, but generally it takes time to build that roster, especially when you don't have a lot of those, like I said, a lot of those veteran players that, can show the way for a lot of the younger guys and help bring them along. But it does take time most of the time for younger players to come in and make their mark.
There's no doubt about it. They're the worst roster in the NFL. Howard Balzer joining us on the HRMP guest line. Howard, a lot of people in Houston want Bryce Young with the number one pick. I'm probably in that same boat. I would like Bryce Young to be the quarterback of the Houston Texans. He gets compared sometimes to Kyler Murray. I don't think it's an apples to apples comparison. Size, similarities. Now, Kyler's a little sturdier than Bryce Young, a little wider than Bryce Young. I think Bryce Young probably best, you hope this if you're a Bryce Young guy, probably has a better work ethic, maybe a higher IQ. But what do you think of Kyler Murray, where he's at currently in terms of the other quarterbacks in the NFL? Where does he stack up?
With Murray, I think that he's certainly not at the top echelon at this time. He's played like it at times, but other times not. And then when the roster collapses around him and you're not having DeAndre Hopkins for 6 games and your offensive line has started 12 different players, and they're putting out an offensive line right now that has basically 4 backups and one guy who started all season, it becomes tough to have consistency on offense. But, Murray gets the fingers pointed at him. Cliff Kingsbury gets the fingers pointed at him, because that's always the easiest thing to do. And so, and Murray still is a work in progress. We see all the skills he has. The one concern, though, and I brought this up numerous times locally in Arizona during the whole contract negotiation deal, and everyone would talk about this and that and the other, but no one mentioned the fact that he's gotten injured every season he's been in the NFL. And I think that's a big risk. And I'm not saying Bryce Young is that exact same guy. But if you bring in one of those quarterbacks and you're expecting them to be durable, that's a heavy thing to ask. I mean, look at Justin Fields. All of a sudden, he's setting the NFL on fire, and then what happens? He gets hurt because he's running. And that's happened to Murray. He just missed two games because of an injury. He's missed games every year he's been in the league. And so I think that's a concern to me. And I saw you know, Justin Herbert on Sunday up close because they were playing the Cardinals here in Arizona. And this is a guy, I think he was the third quarterback taken in the year he was picked. And I couldn't understand that. Big, strong, smart. And, man, that guy's going to – I mean, he is a hell of a player right now, and he's only going to get better and better. And so, to me, I'm not one of these guys that – I mean, they're fun to watch. They're exciting to watch with these guys that run around. But, man, you better be able to stay in the pocket and throw the ball. Better be able to find guys open. I often wonder about Murray at his height, being able to see the whole field when you really have to in the NFL. And so that's why I look at that size. And if you can get a guy like that, the pocket quarterback, yes, you want some mobility to be able to escape the rush and all that, but to me the pocket quarterback will never go away, and that most of the time is the ticket to success in the NFL.
Howard, that's where I was going.
Just look around the teams that win.
That's where I was going to go with that, though. I mean, we talked about the running aspect. I'm talking about the height aspect. I know you mentioned outliers. Well, there's Drew Brees and there's Russell Wilson. But we know that, you know, a lot of – you talk about Herbert. Herbert's a bigger kid. You talk about his size and his physicality. Bryce Young's not that. But how much does the actual height matter when everybody talks from height to hand size about these intangibles? What I see in Bryce Young is a guy that has pocket presence, that the moment isn't too big for him, that is he can be a stabilizing influence from the huddle to the way the play develops to his progressions. I'm a Bryce Young guy. A lot of people here are concerned that Caserio, as a general manager, is looking for that more prototypical big quarterback guy. And I mean, you've seen Kyler Murray. Has the height been a factor?
At times it has been. And it's not like it happens on every play, but at times it has been. And so here's the thing. If that's what's available and you feel you're going to structure your offense for that particular quarterback, then you go with it. But if the choice is someone who's a bit taller, and I'm not saying they have to be 6'4", 6'5", but if there's one of those guys, then to me, that's who you pin your hopes on. That's the way I kind of look at it. I don't have anything against Bryce Young. He could be one of those guys that comes in and has the ability to still play at a high level. And if you believe in your evaluation that he is the best guy available and that he's going to be your quarterback for the next 10 or 15 years, then you go for it. But I do think that height, you know, can be an issue when you're talking about quarterbacks and the pass rush that there is now and getting passes deflected and things like that. So it'll be interesting to a lot of these teams how it all plays out with the quarterback class as we get into this, you know, the pre-draft process.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Bryce guy too, but I'm also not naive to the fact that the height matters. I mean, it's like saying rebounding in the NBA. Like, you might like a 6'5 rebounder, but it would sure help if he was 6'9, 6'10. Exactly. Yep. Howard, great stuff as always. We always appreciate the time. Enjoy this week in the NFL. We'll catch up next week.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Howard Balzer, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter, joining us on the HRNP guest line. We can kick around that conversation. Also, which NFL division leaders do you trust? Which do you not? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Open wide for some soccer!
Who said that?
That's from The Simpsons.
Oh, okay. That explains it. Yeah, as we had Howard Balzer on, Christian Pulisic was getting hit in the Howard Balzers as he put the Americans up 1-0.
It's a good call. Yeah, he took a solar plexus shot, but he did get the shot on goal, and gave exactly what Glenn Davis wanted to see. The first goal matters, and whichever team scored first would have a massive advantage, and hopefully that bodes well for the USA.
That's like, isn't that always true? in a sport,
well, with
that
a team that doesn't score at all, like the United States.
But that's soccer, right? Yeah. Like, that's football. Like, there's not many goals in soccer.
Any sport, you don't score a lot.
Like, what are some of the, and we love Glenn, and Glenn had way more to say than just that. We're kind of cherry picking here and having some fun. But, like, of the all time, like, great analysis, that's like on the list. Like, what are the laziest analysis that you always hear for like every single sport? 713-780-3776 for like, get that first goal, it's such a huge advantage in a sport where they score like three goals per game.
Team X wants
that matters. My favorite's in baseball were like, you got to be the first team to score. Yeah, of course, that'd be awesome to be the first team to score.
I hate when we get the analysis, especially late in the season, of Team X needs it more. Like, yeah. like the other team is just like, oh, they've got no motivation. They don't care at all. They're just going to show up and mail it in. It's lazy analysis.
Yeah. But I think that
you get a lot of it.
But you look at the fact that, as he explained it, I mean, how, you know, a defensive-minded Iranian team, obviously, if they score first and they're just going to go hyper defense, and if the USA can get on the board first, then they might be in panic mode and they might make mistakes, but...
No, I mean, I understand the logic, but soccer in general is a sport where they don't score many goals. So
if you score
first, yes, that is a huge advantage because that's probably going to be at least half of the goals scored in that match.
Yeah,
it's the same thing in baseball. Like, well, they should get out and score in the first couple of innings. Cool.
I think they're going to try to.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on keys to the game in basketball either, because the keys to the game when the best analysis can be, well, I mean, you got to score more points than the other team. Well, that normally would get you a victory in basketball, too.
The keys are always like, make threes, score in the paint.
Yeah.
Well, really? I think we're going to...
Don't turn the ball over. Well, that would help.
Yeah. I saw a college football keys to the game the other day, and it said go 1-0. Like, you might as well just say score more points than the other team. Go one. Okay.
So the key to the game,
what are you trying to do?
That's coach speak. That's so coach speak.
It wasn't a coach.
I'm saying that's so coach speak about... Trent Dilfer always wears the shirt, go 1-0, about, you know, it's not worried about, you know, we're trying to win a national championship or trying to win the division. It's just, we're every week our goal is to go 1-0.
Yeah.
No bleep. Really?
Go. What are the keys? Go 1-0. Thanks. That's awesome. It's like scoring the first goal. 8562, the best player has to be the best. Other cliches. Like, what are the biggest...
You play to win the game.
Cliche, keys to the game. 713-780-ESPN. Because, I mean, there's certain things, like Glenn's right, in this matchup, like, you have a defensive-minded Iranian team. USA has had trouble scoring goals. Getting a goal early is obviously very big. It is always very big in soccer, but especially in this one. Like, you have certain matchups, like in basketball, where it's like, okay, the rebounding could be a huge factor in this game. How will the bigs, you know, defend this other team's bigs? Like, there's always key critical matchups, but you always, it doesn't matter. You get those lazy analysts that are like, oh, yeah, you know, you gotta box out today. Okay, cool. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We talked mostly Bryce Young with Howard Balzer. 9982 says, Casario is not going to take Bryce Young. I don't understand lust towards him as the number one pick. No offense to his talents, but if I were him, I'm going back for another year. I wouldn't want to play for the disaster team on Kirby. Okay, that's multiple different conversations,
there.
But I think good stuff. The whole Casario is not going to take Bryce Young, that's kind of like, you kind of went a bunch of different directions here, 982. You said that Casario is not going to take him, and then you said Bryce Young doesn't want to play for him, so it's kind of two separate thoughts, but we can break down both of them. The Casario not taking Bryce Young, that's a theory. It's a theory that I've had. I've been meaning to go look at like the size of quarterbacks the New England Patriots have drafted since Nick Casario and Belichick were there together. Somebody on Reddit did it, and it confirmed my thoughts. Like, everybody's usually 6'2 or taller. Bryce Young's not 6'2 or taller. The Houston Texans have not had a long history of taking quarterbacks under Nick Casario. We've only really seen three. We've seen him select Davis Mills. We've seen him sign Kyle Allen. They brought in Jeff Driscoll, who some people would not even say is a quarterback, right? More of a tight end.
Yeah.
So, like, we don't have a large sample of what Casario wants as a quarterback. So it's more theory than, like, something that's set in stone. I believe that it could possibly be true. Now, the Bryce Young staying at Alabama, why would he stay at Alabama? This Penn State offensive lineman, by the way, he actually is like, he was the number one graded offensive tackle. He's staying at Penn State for a year. I think we're going to start seeing more of this in a day and age of NILs and things like that. But when you're a franchise-level quarterback, you're not going to stay in college because you don't want to play for a team. You would just go the Eli Manning route where you demand a trade, that sort of thing.
Right.
It is so important for for a franchise quarterback, somebody who could be a high-level player in the NFL, especially at the quarterback position that could make tons of money, for them to apparently the American scored again.
They did.
American scored again. A lot of people yelling, oh, he might have been offside. Yeah, he was offside, and the goal will not count. Anyways, like, it's so important for Bryce Young to start his service time in the NFL, because once he gets to that fifth-year player option, huge money. Once he gets after that fifth-year player option, now you're looking at, like, life-changing
money.
You don't want to put it like a year of service time, kick it down the road. Now, if he doesn't want to play for the Texans, he's going to demand a trade.
And quarterbacks,
he stays in,
like,
Alabama.
You mentioned, Eli Manning and others have been able to demand a trade, and they've gotten it. But the question goes that I go back to is again with the size matters issue, and that is, in terms of the intangibles and the measurables, the intangibles to me are the fact that this guy in Bryce Young seems to be in total control at all times in the huddle. He has a knack for stepping up big in the biggest moments. He can lead his team on the big drives that they need. He has a pocket presence that understands everything from reading the route trees and the progressions to the internal clock in his head. If you're going there and saying, okay, I go and I look at that versus a Stroud or a Levis or someone like that and go, well, he's got all the measurables, but I don't know about his intangibles and how easy it's going to be for him to develop said intangibles. How do you make that, how do you decipher and go, well, that's more, the size is more important to me than the kid that's between his ears got it going for him. And yeah, he's 180 pounds. I would assume he's going to get somewhat bigger. It's unfair to compare him to Kyler Murray because he's never going to be that athletic, but he doesn't have to be if he plays the position the right way.
Yeah. I think that's – look, all the quarterbacks have questions. We've talked about that for the last month. Bryce Young has the size question. C.J. Stroud has, is he a product of the system question. He's making, you know, one read throws and throwing to first-round receiver after first-round receiver after first-round receiver after first-round receiver. And then Will Levis was lousy in this past year. He just was not a good football player at Kentucky this past season. They fired their offensive coordinator today, too. Like, Levis looks the part. Many people think that he can develop into being that guy. C.J. Stroud, there's questions about can he play the quarterback position in the NFL where he's making more than just one read throws and throwing to talented wide receiver after talented wide receiver. And then the other part's Bryce Young's size. So, like, it's going to come down to what they covet, what they value. If they value size, it's not going to be Bryce Young. It's just not. It wouldn't shock me either if the Texans go outside of the quarterback position. But as far as, like, and maybe going Willie
it's
Anderson,
also what
Jalen
they can
Carter,
develop, right? Because from the intangible side of things, you take a kid that and you say, I can develop that pocket presence in said quarterback. I think he can grasp it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe. We don't know. Like, how
well, I mean,
these
you're not
going to
take a kid that's 6'5", 230, that, you know, has a rocket arm but has zero concept and doesn't look like he's giving you any indication he's going to pick it up.
See, a lot of coaches do. A lot of coaches like that. A lot of, like, this, the Anthony Richardson of Florida, I think, is an example of that, where he's 6'4", 230 pounds, is fast, has a cannon for an arm, and they're going to fall in love with that and be like, oh, I can teach the intangibles. I can teach where to go with the football. I can teach the accuracy. And usually it's those projects that are the most difficult to get going.
Trey Lance. There's some that believe in San Francisco that, you know, Shanahan was going to be able to teach him everything he didn't know and develop it quickly, and it hasn't developed quickly yet. So there's some people that believe, whether he was hurt or not, that he wasn't grasping it yet, though he had all of the measurables.
Yeah, yeah, I think that he's a good example of that. It's going to be interesting. In terms of the Bryce Young, like what he would do, it wouldn't shock me if whoever is projected to be the number one quarterback in the NFL, their agent's like, no, let's demand a trade. Let's get out of here. That wouldn't shock me. What would shock me, though, is if they go back to college for another year. They might avoid the Houston Texans, but I don't think they go to college.
You got to start getting paid as soon as you can, because I believe, like you said, the clock is ticking. You know, the development from a contract, from a structure standpoint, the way the NFL structures it, to get that clock ticking in your direction so that if you are the quarterback that everybody believes you to be, that you cash in as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. But I also think on the flip side of that, agents are going to see this as a very advantageous situation by saying he's going to play right away. There's no doubt about it. He's not being drafted by a team that has another quarterback on the roster or a veteran quarterback to where it might not be for the next year or so while they develop him. You know he's going to play right away. You know he's going to get every ample opportunity to succeed. And I think a lot of agents and players themselves look at that and say, yeah, I want to be the guy that, like Aikman with the Cowboys, came in and right from the get-go got the keys to the car and said, let's go. Let's drive.
Yeah. 9982, he says, just how embarrassing would it be for the Texans from a PR standpoint if Bryce Young or whoever pulls an Eli Manning where they said they don't want to play with it. It would be incredibly embarrassing. It's where the Texans are, though. And, like, if it were to happen, you have to make the best of the situation that you can. It didn't work out. I mean, it worked out fine for the Chargers. I mean, the Chargers ended up getting Phillip Rivers out of the deal, and he turned out to be all right, you know? So, just, like, if it happens, is it terrible from a PR standpoint? Yeah. Do you have egg on your face? Yeah. Can you make the best of the situation and turn out to be all right because of the situation? Chargers proved that it could be all right. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Every Tuesday at 2, it's our Cash It or Trash It, where we have takes from over the weekend that we pitch to the other two, and they either cash it or trash it. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.